Welcome, everyone, to Creating a Family, talk about adoption and foster care. Today, we're going to be talking about adoption options. What type of adoption is best for you? So this is going to be a very broad show, and it's going to be a little different because I'm going to be the only guest. And usually we have a guest, as you know, those of you who've listened, we have a guest expert. But today, I'm it. I've got my water lined up. I've got my tea lined up because at some point you'll have to pause with me as I wet my whistle, as my grandmother would say. So without further ado, let's just jump in and talk about adoption options. There are four basic types, really three types of adoption, but I'm going to throw in a fourth one. You're going to get a bonus today. We have domestic infant adoption, foster care adoption, and international adoption. And then something that is actually not adoption, but because it can be generally perceived as non-genetic parenting, I wanted to throw it in as well, and I'll be at the end, and that's going to be on embryo donation. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. And we're going to walk you through each type and go, or I'm going to walk you through each type, there's no we here, and go over the process, the timing, the cost, the risk factors that parents should consider at the beginning, and other factors that you should think about, like the opportunity for openness, the options for transracial, and for things like that. So without further ado, let's jump into domestic infant adoption. There are about 18,000 and 19,000 domestic infant adoptions every year. Believe it or not, we actually don't know the specific number, the precise number. And it always surprises people, but there isn't one database or one place that all this information has to be amassed, because domestic infant adoption is controlled through state law. And different states different courts handle it, different states, some states tally the numbers, some do not. But this is a relatively good estimate that we have. And the numbers are holding about steady. They really have not, they certainly have not increased, and they have decreased in the last, say, 15 or 20 years. But for the last ever number of years, it's been holding its own at right around 18,500, something along those lines. The process of how you go about adopting an infant domestically in the U.S., a couple of things you need to know. One, it is a birth parent selection process. And what I mean by that is that most often the expectant parents, certainly the expectant mom, and if the expectant dad is in the picture, the two of them select the family, the couple or the person that they want to raise their child. Different laws apply in different states. As I mentioned, it's controlled by state law. So that means that different states have different laws. And it's not just the actual law in the book, but we also have case law. And different states obviously would have different case law there. Some of the ways that states differ is whether or not they allow advertising, whether they allow you to use a facilitator or any other type of intermediary, or do you have to use an agency, whether birth parents' expenses can be paid, and if so, how much and when, and birth parent expenses, or really should be called expectant parent expenses. It could be, depending on the state, it can be transportation, it could be clothing, it could be housing, it could be food, it can be any number of things. Another way that states differ is when consent or relinquishment of parental rights is allowed to be given, how much time has to pass before parents can relinquish their rights. And if consent can be revoked after the birth parents have relinquished their rights, and if so, under what conditions. So that's just an example of some of the differences you're going to see in different states. And so why it is important to be working with professionals who know your state's law. You can use, for domestic infant adoption in most states, you can use either an adoption agency or an adoption attorney. That's not the same. Some states do not allow adoption attorneys to actually match expectant parents and adoptive parents. So different roles are allowed under different states. One thing to note is that adoption, the services offered by adoption agencies and adoption attorneys can differ significantly. And you, and again, it's somewhat controlled by, well, it's a little bit controlled by state law, but it's also just controlled by what services they're going to offer. Generally speaking, we tell people that when you adopt, you can, that adoption agencies provide a more well-rounded services, service offerings. I had an adoption attorney tell me one time that adopting through an agency is like buffet, going to a buffet, and adopting through an attorney is like a la carte. And I think that's not a bad analogy to work with. When you adopt through an agency, things like counseling for birth parents, things like education for adoptive parents, all that type of stuff is usually all included, including usually the legal cost as well. When you adopt from an adoption attorney, usually, although not always, you're going to be paying individually for these services. The only thing that's absolutely included is the cost of the legal work for doing the adoption. So that's just those are some of the slight distinctions between the two. Let me recommend a Creating a Family resource that I think is absolutely golden for not only understanding the differences, but how to choose. And that is, we have a multimedia guide. It's titled Choosing an Adoption Agency or an Adoption Attorney. And you can find it on our site by going up to, it's creatingafamily.org. And there's a horizontal menu at the top. Hover over the word resources and click on e-guides, and you can get it there. And it is truly a great resource. I'm really proud of it. We include lists of questions to ask, how to make the distinction. Really, we walk you through every aspect of it, of choosing and making a decision on how to choose an adoption agency. And I should say that's irrespective of which type of adoption, because we cover domestic adoption, international adoption, adopting from foster care. So all of those are covered, and we talk about the distinctions and how to do that. All right, we go back to the process. All right, so we've talked about there being, it's birth parents or expectant parent selection, different laws covered. You could use selecting an adoption agency or an adoption attorney to help you. You can also try to find a birth parent on your own and then just go to an adoption attorney and have them do the legal work. So an expectant parent, finding an expectant parent on your own. One of the first things you will do once you find an agency or an attorney, either one, is you will need to have a home study done. What is involved in the home study? It should be ideally what we want is for the home study to be a combination of inspecting you and making sure that you're the right parent, but also educating you and supporting you through this process. So that is that is something that, and again, when you are adopting through an agency, that is usually included. If you're adopting through an attorney, you usually will pay in addition, you'll pay for that separately. It is possible to adopt interstate. In fact, many across state lines. In fact, many adoptions are done that way. So many domestic infant adoptions are done that way. One of the hallmarks of domestic infant adoptions now in the U.S. is that they are, most of them are open. That is a term that we use to describe the contact of some sort, and it may not be actual contact, it may be more exchanging. It takes on any number of forms. One of the forms that it might take off would just be exchanging letters and pictures. It could go to phone calls. It could be meetings in person. It could be meetings in person every once in a while. It could be meetings in person once a month. All of that is determined by the arrangements between the birth parents, at this point they would be birth parents, because it would be the distinction is an expectant parent is when they're pregnant. They're only birth parents once they have relinquished their parental rights. So that is a negotiation. What we mean by openness is negotiated between the two sets of parents. But I will tell you that 95% of adoptions in the U.S., domestic infant adoptions, have some degree of openness. And I also will tell you that most of the time, adoptive parents, well, quite frankly, expectant parents as well, don't really know what openness means, and they need to be educated on it. We have a lot of resources at Creating a Family to do just that. You would go to our website, creatingafamily.org, click on or hover over adoption, go on to our resources guide or topics, and click on open adoption and scroll down, and you can have audio resources. We've got videos, we've got tip sheets, we've got fact sheets, blogs, articles, you name it. So it really helps to get educated before you form an opinion on whether or not openness is something you're interested in. But one thing to note, one thing it is not, and that is it's not co-parenting. The adoptive parents are the active parents of that child. So that's an important distinction to note at the beginning. The next thing I want to talk to you about with domestic infant adoption are typical risk factors that adoptive parents need to consider or may be asked to consider. One of the ones that is more troublesome for adoptive parents and where they need information is on prenatal exposure. There are both short-term and long-term impacts from prenatal exposure. And keep in mind that prenatal exposure runs a spectrum, obviously, depending on the amount of exposure and the substance that the fetus is exposed to. And that would include things like, obviously, alcohol, illegal drugs, legal drugs, tobacco. Also, all of these things may or may not have an impact. And it's something that adoptive parents need to become educated on. Again, we have a lot of resources and we have a lot of courses at creatingafamily.org. Click on online, go to creatingafamily.org, click on online education, and go to adoption and scroll all the way down, and we break everything down by topics. Click on prenatal exposure, and you will see all the courses that we have on prenatal exposure. And we have some really good ones. Another risk factor to consider, or that you may be asked to consider, are mental health issues in the birth family. You may or may not have information on this, but if the expectant parents know the information, they will usually be asked and can share whether they themselves have mental health issues or if someone in their immediate family does. Another risk factor is what we call legal risk. And what that usually means in domestic infant adoption is that you have an unidentified birth father. And that we call that legal risk because the birth father is not identified and you can't get relinquishment if he's either unknown or unidentified. And there are specific things that you have to do legally, depending on what state you live in, to be able to adopt a child when one of the parents is not able to actually relinquish. So those are some of the risk factors. But when we talk about risk factors, one of the things that I want to be really careful on is to not leave you with the impression that adopted kids have lots of problems, and because that isn't the truth. It is a myth. But I do, I mean, when we talk about risk factors, it kind of feeds this myth. So I just wanted to make a comment now to say that is just absolutely not the case. Big news, everyone. The Jockey Bean Family Foundation has provided us with scholarships for free access to 5 of our most popular courses. You can find these courses and the coupon code at the website bit.ly/JBF support. That is bit.ly/JBF, then cap S for support. So JBFS, that's all capitalized, then UPPORT. Again, the coupon code to get you these courses free is going to be on that page as well. And the courses are Raising Resilient Kids with Dr. Ken Ginsberg, Raising a Child with ADHD to a Successful and Healthy Adulthood with Dr. Ned Halliwell, Unexpected Stresses for Newly Adoptive Parents, Practical Solutions to Typical Food Issues with Dr. Katja Rao, and Parenting Children Who Have Experienced Trauma with Karen Buckwalter. Make sure you go to the bit.ly/JBF bfsupport to get information on these courses. All right, something else to consider with domestic infant adoption is the possibility of adopting transracially. A growing number of domestic infant adoptions are transracial, and it's really hard to know what the percentages are for transracial because, as I mentioned at the beginning, we don't keep good records on this. But I will tell you that in our work here at Creating a Family, we absolutely see that it is growing with domestic infant. I will just pause now to mention that about 25 to 30% of adoptions through foster care are transracial, and the majority of international adoptions are transracial. But with domestic infant, it is a growing number. There is often a shorter wait associated for families who are willing to accept or are wanting to accept, adopt a full African American boy. Now that's beginning to change somewhat, but in the past that has certainly held true. Parents need to be fully prepared to become a transracial adoptive family, to become a transracial family. So we don't want people to go into the idea of transracial adoption of saying, okay, I'll adopt transracially just so I can get a baby sooner. That is not the right approach. Adoption is for life, and adopting a child of a different race changes your family, not just your immediate family, but also your extended family. You become a transracial family. And that's important to embrace. And transracial parenting is different from parenting a child. And you need to, parenting a child of your own race, because you need to be prepared to how to help that child navigate being a person and an adult, both a child, a teen, and an adult of that race in our society. Again, we have a lot of courses to help you on this if you are considering transracial adoption. Again, you would go to our website, creatingafamily.org, click on online courses, online education, click on adoption, and then scroll down to the bottom, and you will see everything broken out by topics, and click on transracial. All right, the cost. The cost for a domestic infant, if you're adoption in the U.S., I'm going to be giving you ranges because the truth is there's a lot of things that impact cost. But we can give you averages is what we can give you. So if adopting from an agency, the average would be between $40,000 and $45,000. If adopting from an attorney, the range would be, say, $30,000 to $35,000. But I'm going to tell you to be wary of averages because, as I pointed out, as I said earlier, there are so many things that affect cost. One of the things that affects cost is what services are included. Another thing is whether or not you find the expectant parent or mom on your own, or whether the agency is doing that for you. Another big one, it could be expectant mother expenses. At what point, when in the pregnancy are you matched? If you're matched early in the pregnancy and you're the expectant mom is in a state that allows a lot of expenses to be covered, to be paid for by the adoptive parents, then obviously that cost is going to be higher. Another factor to consider that affect cost is failed matches and who pays for those. What we call a failed match is when you are matched with an adoptive parent is matched with a expectant parent. And the expectant parent changes their mind and decides to parent. It is certainly within their rights to do that. In fact, no state are you able to relinquish your rights to your child until after birth. And the reality is what you think you're going to do may be different after you give birth. And so it is not uncommon for matches to fail. We actually have a wonderful article. We did a survey of families, and we did a survey of agencies and attorneys, and it's called Failed Adoption Matches. So you can Google that for our website, Creating a Family, and Google Failed Adoption Matches, and I highly recommend it. It's a really good resource. But who pays for that? If some agencies require that all the cost associated that you've already put into the adoption that fell apart after the adoption didn't happen. It was a failed match. The adoptive parents have to incur that cost. Other agencies might have a pool where you're not expected to pay as an individual. And then some agencies would then allow you to have the many of the other than things like expectant mom expenses, you could, your agency fee would apply to the next adoption. So all of those things, and different agencies handle it different ways. And that obviously would impact your cost significantly. The number of adoption agencies or adoption attorneys you apply to also impacts the cost. And you need to check with your contract under both to make certain that it is allowed for you to apply to more than one. But assuming it is, and you do apply to more than one, obviously you're paying application fees more than once, and so that will increase your cost. And obviously, travel. I mentioned earlier that you will be that you can adopt a child in another state. And if you do, you will incur travel costs. You perhaps during the pregnancy, you will want to travel to the state to meet the expectant mom. And then after the birth, you will go there and to pick up the child. And you will be required to stay while your state and the state where the baby is born work out the paperwork. So it could be anywhere from 5 days to 2 weeks that you will be staying there. So all of this adds cost which is why it's hard to give one single estimate on cost. Keep in mind when we talk about costs, and this would apply to all types of adoption, we do have a federal adoption tax credit in the United States. It is available for domestic infant, adoption from foster care, international. It is not available for embryo donation. The adoption tax credit changes per year. However, it is around $14,000 and will be increased slightly every year based on cost of living. And every year, we do a course for the it's our annual adoption tax credit course. I recommend it again, you can find it at creatingafamily.org. Click on online education. The timing is something that a lot of parents ask about for how long do I have to wait to be able to adopt a child, an infant domestically? That's hard to answer because we're going to be talking in a minute about some of the factors that influence timing. However, again, I can give you an average. About 65% of adoptive parents are able to match with an expectant parent within 1 year. And about 84% match within 2 years. And the factors that affect timing are the adoptive parent's openness to race or adopting a child of a different race, adopting a child with prenatal exposures to alcohol or drugs, adopting a child where there are mental health issues in the birth family, and costs. Quite frankly, families who can afford higher cost adoptions are able to adopt faster. We have a resource, a free resource on our site called 5 Reasons You Are Not Getting an Adoption Match. You can just Google that and with the words creating a family and it will pop up. And so I recommend that and we go into details onto those factors. So that is the first of the 3 actual types of adoption. And now we're going to move to talking about adopting from foster care or foster care adoptions. We'll start with the numbers. There are over 400,000 children in the United States in our foster care system. Of those, about 125,000 are waiting for adoption. And about 60,000 children are adopted from foster care every year. These are general. They vary some by year, but that's a pretty good average over the last several years. The process of adopting from foster care is significantly different than would be from domestic infant adoption. The first thing that you have to keep in mind is that the goal of our foster care system is family reunification. And if you think about it, that's exactly what it wanted to be. We want families to heal and for children to be able to go back to their families. About 50% of the children who enter foster care are able to successfully reunify with their birth families, with their families. About 25% of the children who enter foster care are adopted by non-relatives. The vast majority of those people who are adopting that 25% are their active foster parents, or the parents who are fostering them. There are really two ways to adopt from foster care. One is something, it's called different things, but it's foster to adopt. And the other way is adopting a child that is legally free. Under the first, you are the child's foster parent. And you go into it knowing that your role, at least initially, is to try to help heal that family. And that means taking the child to visits. It means not talking bad about the child. It means including the birth family in as many things as you can include them in. The idea is that you are part of the team that is trying to help this family heal. And if they do heal, if the family is able to get their act together and the reunification is possible, then the child goes back to live with their family. However, if the family is not able to heal and the child is not able to go back, then usually you will be asked if you want, you'll be given the first option of being someone to adopt that child. So that is certainly a way that you can adopt from foster care. And as I mentioned, about 25% of the children who enter are ultimately adopted usually by their foster parents. It is also possible there are about, as I mentioned at the beginning of this talk, about 125,000 children waiting for adoption in the foster care system. Their parental rights have already been terminated, and for whatever reason, they are not going to be able to be adopted by their foster families. So they are their caseworkers are actively looking for an adoptive family for them. They tend to be over the age of 6, and many of them, the greatest need is for children upwards of age 10 into the tween and teen years. We also have a large number of sibling groups that are needing families to adopt them. So that is so, and so younger children tend to be that we don't see a lot of. Certainly not babies, and certainly not even toddlers who are legally free to be adopted, and so without having to go through the foster process. Another feature of the process for adopting from foster care is you usually have the option of either working with either your county agency. It goes by different things in different states: Department of Social Services, Department of Child and Family, any number of things. It's whatever your child and family or your foster care system is called in your state. So you can adopt through your county agency. Or parish agency in Louisiana, or you can adopt through a private agency. This is not, you'll have to check and see if what your state allows. Most states now allow private agencies to place children from foster care. So that is probably going to be an option, but again, you're going to have to check and see what your state allows. But usually you'll have a choice between adopting from a county agency or a private agency. In that e-guide that I mentioned earlier, how to choose an adoption agency or adoption attorney, we talk about the distinctions between and some of the advantages and disadvantages of adopting either through your county agency or a private agency. So I recommend that you check that out. Just like with domestic infant adoption, you're going to have a home study as a part of it. And adoption education is a part of the process. And that will be included as part of your services being provided by your agency. Whether or not you can, we're often asked, is it possible to adopt a child from foster care from another state? The answer is yes, but you can tell by the pause here that there's going to be a but coming, and there is. Yes, but. And the but is that if a child is legally free, it is possible to adopt them from another state. But in my experience, agencies, both state and private, are not real encouraging of that. And quite frankly, it's because it's a lot more hassle and cost for them. Because for them, if they found let's say it's an agency in Kansas, a child's in Kansas and the caseworkers are in Kansas and they find a family in Florida, that's a lot of work from the agency and travel and cost expenses for the agency. So generally speaking, they're going to first try to find a family that is closer to the child. It's also complicated because even though the child's parental rights have been terminated, there may have been a decision made that it's in the child's best interest to be able to maintain contact with siblings who may be adopted by other families or may be being, you know, are emancipated and old enough on their own, or aunts, uncles, grandparents, or whatever. So that becomes more complicated, and depending on the child, it might not be in the child's best interest to be moved far away from this extended family that they would like to stay in contact with. And usually, the other way is to foster a child, but usually that does not happen. There, most counties are looking for families within the county or close by to be a foster family for their children. So that does not happen very often. All right, what type of kids are available for adoption from foster care? Let's talk about age. All ages are available, but infants are not readily available and almost always enter the home as a foster child first with the intent for family reunification. Roughly 7,500 kids are adopted each year under the age of 2, and 15,000 are adopted under the age of 3. And almost all of those would be adopted by their foster family or extended biological family. The greatest need for families, adoptive families for kids in foster care are for children ages 5 and up, as well as sibling groups. The races of kids available are 44%, and again, these are rough numbers. They do change annually, but they don't change very much. So between 40 and 45% white, between 20 and 24% black, about same percentage for Hispanic, and about but keep in mind about 28% of the adoptions for foster care are transracial. The genders of children available for adoption is really easily evenly split between girls and boys. And keep in mind that there are almost always sibling groups because we really do try to keep sibling groups together. And so there's a shorter wait for families who are able to accept the placement of a sibling group. Openness. We talked about openness in domestic infant. Openness is becoming more of an option in adoptions from foster care. It's complicated because oftentimes, there is a reason that a child has been removed. However, for the same reasons that openness is encouraged with domestic infant, it's because it's in the best interest of the child. That's why we do it. Those same best interests may exist in foster care. So that's something that may be asked about you. But keep in mind that openness can look differently. It can be sharing photos. It can be photos and text messages or whatever. It doesn't have to be necessarily meeting, and that's not necessarily recommended if there are safety factors involved. All right, we're going to be talking about now the risk factors when adopting from foster care. Obviously, children enter foster care for a reason, and often the most common reason is neglect, but abuse exists as well. So these children have experienced trauma. And children who have experienced trauma take parents who are educated on how trauma impacts children. So that's something to go into it with your eyes wide open, that you will need to become educated on how you can best parent a child who has experienced trauma in their early life. Another risk factor are multiple placements. It's not unheard of for children to have been moved from foster family to foster family before they become available. And each move exacts a damage on a child, and that's something to be aware of. Prenatal exposure is common in children who have available for adoption or fostering from foster care. So that's something to be aware of. And special needs. Many of the children have been classified as special needs, although it's a child who is older is classified as special needs. Special needs in foster care adoption really means any factor that makes the child harder to place. the cost for foster care adoption is basically zero. The cost is absorbed by the state, and that's total cost, home study, education, the whole thing, legal fees, everything. Also, the adoption tax credit is still available even if you have not incurred fees. So you can still get the credit, whatever the credit is, if you have adopted a child through foster care and the child has been deemed to have special needs. That's you need to listen to the course on the adoption tax credit to understand the distinctions. But most children adopted from foster care are eligible for the full adoption tax credit, even if their parents incur no expenses. Timing of adopting from foster care. It really does depend on your openness to risk factors, age of the child, and sibling groups. Generally speaking, about 60% of parents are matched within 1 year when they're seeking to adopt from foster care, about 75% match within 2 years. And if you are currently fostering that child, keep in mind that the child is living with you until the finalization. So you're actively parenting a child during that time. All right, we have talked about domestic infant adoption. We've talked about adopting a child from the U.S. foster care system. Now let's talk about international adoption. International adoptions have been declining in the last several years, and the decline seems to be increasing. It could be around 4,000 is what in 2018, and that was a decline of 655 from 2017. The numbers are continuing to go down. However, there are still children in need, and it is still a very viable option for creating your family. The process for adopting internationally is to first choose a country. Creating a Family has a wonderful free resource for you to help you choose a country. We have country comparison charts. You can find them on our website, creatingafamily.org. Hover over the word adoption and click on comparison charts. And we analyze each country for all the relevant factors that we think parents need to know about when deciding on a country. So I highly recommend that resource. And then choose an agency that has a program placing children from that country. It is also possible to choose a waiting child and utilize various websites. That Rainbow Kids website is certainly one that comes to mind, as well as most agencies have waiting children on their site. So that's another option as well for how to find a child. You don't have to go that way. You could just apply to the agency and not choose a child that's currently on their website as a waiting child. Home study, as I mentioned, is required for all types of adoption, including international adoption. Your international adoption agency will either be the one performing the home study, or they will have an agency that they work with in your state that will do the home study. Interstate adoptions are very common. It's very common to work with an agency in a state that is not your own. So that is that is the norm, actually, with international adoptions. Some of the risk factors with international adoptions. International adoptions now have really become almost exclusively a special needs adoption program. But the special needs differ depending on the country and depending on what you're open to. One of the things is that when we speak of special needs and international adoption, there are still a lot of medical conditions where the child does not have the option of good medical treatment in that country for that condition, and for whatever reason is available for adoption, and perhaps because of that reason. And so medical conditions is a common special need, and they can range from anything like cleft lip, club foot, all the way up to major heart conditions. So that is one type of special needs, but also adopting an older child, that is a different type of special need. And so all of those are options that you should consider when a risk factor that you should consider. Another risk factor for international adoption are countries closing. Generally speaking, we have advance warning that a country will close, but that doesn't always happen. And if your agency does not have a program, any other programs in any other countries, that could be a risk factor for you because you could lose the money that you have spent up to that point in time. So it's important to talk with your agency about the stability of that country, as well as what other programs that they may have, whether countries they may have programs in that you would be eligible to adopt from. Openness is not very common in international adoption. However, there is a growing trend of adult adoptees going back trying to find birth parents in their country, even though that would become open at a later period of time. Citizenship. There was the child, does your child become a U.S. citizen? The Child Citizenship Act of 2000, the child has automatic citizenship if one of the adoptive parents is a U.S. citizen, and the child is under the age of 18, and the adoption is final when the child arrives in the U.S. If it's not final, if the adoption is not final, most adoptions, international adoptions, are final when they arrive. But if there are a few countries that that's not the case, and if that isn't the case, then you would finalize the adoption in the U.S., and then you would get the child citizenship after that fact. The cost of adoptions, international adoptions, vary greatly by country. And one of the major factors that influences cost is how many trips to the country is required, because travel costs do absolutely add up. Let me give you an example of two countries, two of the more popular countries. One is China, and the cost, the turnkey cost, including travel, is about $35,000. And South Korea is another one, and the turnkey cost there is between $40,000 and $50,000, again, travel being a big factor on that one. The timing for international adoptions depends on the country. You've heard me say that a lot. Well, it depends, but it does. Depends on the country. It also depends on your openness to risk factors, special needs, age, and gender. Again, I refer you to the Creating a Family Country charts for a good review of all of those, what's available by country. But to give you a feel, for China, the China program, about 68% of families are matched within about 6 months, and about 86% are matched within 1 year. And in South Korea, 85% are matched within 1 year and 100% are matched within 2 years. However, keep in mind that families then have to wait 1 to 1.5 years after referral before they are able to travel to South Korea to pick up their child. So that, you know, that definitely affects my definition of timing. All right. So we've now covered domestic infant. We've covered a domestic infant adoption. We've covered adoption, adopting from foster care, and we've covered international. Those are the three main types of adoption. But remember, I was going to throw in a bonus for you, and that is to talk about embryo donation. And it's sometimes called embryo adoption. And it is a form of non-genetic parenting, so I think it's worth talking about. And we certainly see an increase in interest of families who are willing to consider that as an option. So it's worth talking about in this show. All right. As I mentioned, it can go by the name adoption, embryo donation, and you will sometimes hear agencies who have programs, embryo donation programs, call it embryo adoption. And it's somewhat, what that does is highlight the fact that they're really two type of models that people use for embryo donation. One is what we call the adoption model, and the other one, and we're going to contrast that with the medical model. The adoption model treats the process of placing an embryo treats the process of a family having an donating an embryo to another family as an adoption, even though it's not technically an adoption because there's not a live child. And the other, the medical approach, treats it as the name implies, a medical procedure. The way embryos become available for adoption are unused embryos from another couple's or another person's IVF process. The way the IVF works in the United States is to try to create as many embryos as possible because it's increases your chances, the infertile patient's chance of ultimately having a take-home baby or two. But if for families who are for patients who have been successful and relatively quick, it is not uncommon for them to have remaining embryos. And they, one option they have to do with what to do with these, it's a huge dilemma for families with leftover embryos. One of the options they can consider is to donate their embryos to another family to use to try to get pregnant with and conceive and then give birth to this child. The adoption model treats this transfer as they require a home study. They allow the placing family to have selection if they choose, or to specify criteria on who they want to receive their embryos. The medical model usually does not provide any of that. The medical model says that this is a medical procedure. An embryo is thawed and is transferred into the recipient's uterus with the hope that it implants. If it implants and grows 9 months, you will end up with a baby. So that's the medical model. The adoption model says that you're actually will be raising a child that you're not genetically related to. Therefore, it would be helpful if we need to train you. Usually it requires education for the family. It's also possible that there would be contact or at least sharing of identifying information between the two families. All of this is option or is a possibility when you work with an agency. One of the first questions we get from people is, how do you find embryos? There's a couple of different ways. One, oftentimes infertility clinics are storing the embryos for their patients, and they will have excess embryos. That's where the excess embryos will exist. Not all, but many clinics require that you be a current patient at the clinic in order to be eligible to receive an embryo from that clinic. So that's something to be aware of. Another place to find embryos is through adoption agencies that have an embryo donation program. And usually these are going to be called embryo adoption programs, and some call them snowflake programs and things such as that. Another way to find embryos is there are a couple of clinics in the United States that specialize exclusively in embryo donation. And then last, you can try to self-match. There are sites on the internet where you can go and try to find, as a recipient family and a family who wants to receive donated embryos, you would go on and try to find a family that has excess embryos and try to match that way. Keeping in mind that it is very important if you do that, that you consult with a reproductive law attorney, because you need to think through, both families need to think through the legal ramifications of that. And it can definitely be done, but you need to work with a specialized attorney to do that. All right, the cost for the receiving family, there are no costs for the donating family, or generally they're relatively low for the donating family, although they have to pay their own storage fees. The cost for the receiving families can range anywhere from $5,000 to $16,000 plus. And then, of course, your pregnancy cost on top of that. So those are the costs for an embryo donation. The success rates vary. The success rates, generally speaking, is related to the age of the woman whose eggs are used for the IVF process. One thing to keep in mind that a lot of people don't realize is a fair percentage of the embryos that are donated to other families result from an egg donor IVF cycle, where and egg donors tend to be relatively young. I mean, they generally are in their early 20s. So that makes the success rate higher, because the eggs are, they don't, the woman who donates the eggs is quite young. You can get information on the where to find the embryos and on the success rates on our website, creatingafamily.org, under either adoption or infertility. But you just click on adoption and go down to embryo donation, or click on infertility and go down to embryo donation. And so you can get extensive information on all of that there. The timing, quite frankly, is very difficult to predict, because it really depends on where you're going to be able to find. If you're working, if you're currently a patient in a clinic that has an active embryo donation program, your timing may be very quick. If, however, you're not actively working with a clinic, and then it really depends on finding an agency and how many embryos they have and all of that. So it really does depend quite a bit. Like I said, we have a lot of information on all of this at our adoption agency resource guide or infertility resource guide, either one. We include embryo donation under both of those. So you can go to our website, creatingafamily.org, and get all of that information. Let me also mention that we have lots of courses that cover all of the information that I covered today on these types of adoption. And you can get that by going, you can find these courses by going to our Adopt Ed Center, which is click on online education on our webpage, website, creatingafamily.org, and it will take you over there. And we have extensive, we have 60 some odd courses that you'll get more information than you actually could possibly want. Thank you so much for listening today and to us talk about your adoption options. Adoption can feel overwhelming at the beginning, and I'm so glad that you've tuned in. This is just a beginning overview. To get more information, I encourage you to visit our website. We have lots of free information as well as courses that I hope will be really helpful for you. Keep in mind that this is general advice. To see, understand how this applies to your specific situation, you need to work with your adoption or foster care professional. Thanks for joining us today, and I will see you next week.